Who's Empty-Headed Fool. Hengo's Introduction. Yes is yes, no is no. In Dharma battle, each stands on his own ground. Therefore, it is said, when one's activity is upward, even Shakyamuni, Maitreya, Manjushri, Samantabhadra, the thousand holy ones, and the religious teachers of the whole world become spiritless and silent. When one's activity is downward, even maggots, gnats, and all creatures become brilliantly illuminating and as independent as a 10,000-foot cliff. How is it when one's activity is neither upward nor downward? If there is any rule, rely on the rule. If there is no rule, follow precedent. See the following. Main subject, Bokushu asked a monk, "Where are you from?" The monk gave a katsu. Bokushu said, "This old monk is shouted down by you." The monk shouted again. Bokushu said, "What about the third and fourth times?" The monk stayed silent. Bokushu hit the monk and said, "You empty-headed fool." This is the first day of our October session, and I want to thank everybody for being here at this wonderful, wonderful session. I'm very grateful to you all for coming, and it's wonderful to practice with you. Some of you have come from far away to be here. It's about the perfect kind of day for day one of a session. It's an autumn day, beautiful autumn day. Not too cold, rain is falling, and that's a perfect environment for sitting, I think. This morning we had a very beautiful sit, and I'm sorry I forgot to ring the bell. I was having a good sit myself, and I suddenly looked at my watch, and an hour had gone by. So I'll be more careful. But this is really wonderful. When I do Zazen, when I came here last night, like many people, I have a lot on my plate, and my life can be very stressful too. So when I came here to this session, when I arrived, I just felt so wonderful. There's something so purifying and beautiful about session. And I think some of it is just that you know, normally we're so concerned about, we have many concerns, but often we're concerned about the future. You know, we're worried about how things are going to turn out, and we have our expectations, and we have our fears, you know. And this happens to me, you know, when we imagine what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks or the next month or the next year, we like it to happen according to our idea of what would be good. So we might imagine a story where, you know, the boss brings us into his office and said, "You're doing a great job and I'm going to give you a promotion." Or you might imagine a story where you land a deal, a business deal, or you get a contract, or you get some kind of good grades in school, something like that. And on those occasions, you know, when it actually works out, we feel wonderful. It's like that's the moment has fulfilled the dream, right? The reality and the dream coincide. And those are wonderful moments when that happens. But sometimes the reality begins to deviate from the dream. So, you know, you imagine something is going a certain way, and then, or will go a certain way, and then, as things unfold, they begin to deviate from your expectations. Generally, this creates tension, right? This creates fear and anxiety. And lately, things might have seemed rather uncontrollable, as a matter of fact. So, I work for the state of New Jersey, and I was talking to a person the other day, and he was saying that in the state of New Jersey, they've been delaying budget information until after the election. So apparently the state is more deeply in debt than people realize. And they've been delaying that information because they don't want people to know the real situation, you know, until after, hopefully, people think John Corzine is reelected. So the day after Corzine is reelected, or a couple weeks after, he might announce big cuts in state funding. And he probably is going to cut money for Rutgers, and that's probably going to affect me in some way. Out in California, at state schools in California, faculty have had to take big pay cuts. Not huge, but quite substantial, you know, pay cuts. And the funding for the universities has been cut really dramatically, like 20%. So if that kind of thing happened here in New Jersey, it would be very difficult on many levels. So this kind of uncertainty affects me too, you know. And I've been very worried about about my program. So coming here to sit has been very good for me. It's quite a relief to let that go, you know. I'm fascinated by why, you know, one of the most remarkable things about Zen is that it's possible to be in the moment without anxiety. You know, it's possible to just be in the moment without any anxiety. And when we're in the moment without any anxiety, it's heaven, right? It's just heaven. If you can get rid of your anxiety, basically your unhappiness goes away, I think. It's really magical that we can come here and sit down on the cushion and watch our breath, And eventually reach a point where our anxiety goes away, and then we're serenely dwelling in the moment. I just think that's fascinating. We ask so much of life. We have so many dreams and expectations. And life is so disappointing sometimes because, of course, it almost never goes according to plan. Basically, when it doesn't go according to plan, it's quite frightening and difficult. But at the same time, you know, we have this capacity to just sit down and be quiet. And when we're quiet enough, our problems, our fear and our anxiety go away. Now, I think that's quite remarkable. It's not always so easy to achieve that, though, right? That state. When you sit down on the cushion, you have your discriminating mind, which is thinking, 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 thinking. And also, the discriminating mind is trying to solve the problem that you're facing by thinking it through, right? And analyzing, and also projecting into the future. And this is necessary. I mean, in my office, we do budget projections, right? So we come up with what we think we're going to spend, and uh, And we negotiate with our higher ups, and we arrive at some kind of a figure. And I have to do this. You know, you can't just go forward and not know what you're spending and so on. So planning and thinking things through is very good. It's very important. But on the other hand, things don't always go according to plan, you know. And we can become very frightened when we are when things are deviating from our plan. And sometimes our fear can prevent us from dealing constructively with the situation. So you know, we can be so worried about what's going to happen that we no longer are able to respond to what is happening in a creative way. You know? This is quite common, actually. Being able to sit still on the cushion and calm the discriminating mind, let the discriminating mind be quiet, and just bring the mind back to the moment is really good medicine. You know, really good medicine. But when you try to do that, you might find that you're still not clear, you know, because it's like under the surface, There's still all of these anxieties, you know. So even if your discriminating mind is not operating, even if you're not thinking, you might become aware that under the surface there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear and anxiety still there. And this is like a karma, right? This is your karma. You've created this fear and anxiety. And now it holds on to you, right? So a lot of Zen practice is about working through those kinds of obstacles, right? You know, so there's like the conscious mind, and the conscious mind is busy with thoughts. And there's a kind of unconscious mind too, which is under the surface, which is, you know, full of these crazy images and emotions and memories. And so in a way, you know, we're kind of cleaning up on two levels, right? First of all, we're cleaning up the mind, we bring the thinking mind to a halt. And then we begin to deal with what's under the surface, you know, which is often quite deep. You know, there's quite a bit of stuff under there. And a lot of Zazen practice is working through those obstacles, those fears that are that karmic residue that's buried under the surface. And it can take many days. Generally speaking, it will take you a number of days to begin to feel calmer if you're not calm now. And to have a, we say, purified mind in accord with the way. So, it takes some time, but what eventually happens is really quite wonderful, you know. If we stop stimulating the conscious mind, the discriminating mind, and just keep bringing it back, bringing consciousness back to the moment, it actually makes it possible to the unconscious mind, the mind that's filled with all this karma, begins to clarify also. You know, so it's like when the conscious mind grows still, the unconscious mind grows still. And gradually these two parts of the mind, these two kinds of mind, both become calm and empty. Yeah? And especially the deeper part of our mind, the unconscious part, grows empty over time. And so you'll come onto the cushion one day around day three, And you'll sit down, and there's not a lot of thoughts buzzing in your mind. And under the surface, it's like the surface of your mind has become clear and clean. Every once in a while, you'll notice when you're sitting that absolutely nothing is arising except your awareness of this moment. You know, so every once in a while you'll notice you're sitting on the cushion and you hear the rain fall. And when you look at your mind, it's absolutely empty and still. And when this happens, you'll notice that you're very calm. And you can even feel like great joy. It's really a beautiful state. As I say, it takes a while, that empty-headed state. You know, there's a lot of work to do to get to that place. So, you know, we have to quiet the active, discriminating mind. And that's difficult because it's in the habit of trying to think things through. And it's trying to solve all of its problems by coming up with kind of like a plan. And by the way, that mind is very important. But, sometimes it has to be put to rest, you know. And then we have to deal with this other material under the surface, which is the karma and the anxiety, fear, whatever, anger, you know. And when both of these are grow still, there's a kind of meeting of these two, of like the conscious and the unconscious both become clear. And then everything around you is like looking in a mirror. It's so clear, right? It's just like this beautiful, beautiful unfolding of things. And there's no obstruction, right? You hear the sound of the rain. It's just you become one with the sound. You hear the wind or the sound of cars, and you become one with the sound. It might almost feel like they're coming out of you, like they're arising from you. And when this happens, it's really quite wonderful. Now, in the deeper states of this is really the object of Zen practice, this state of unified mind, right? It's like you're present in the moment, the conscious mind is quiet, the unconscious mind is pure and clear, and everything that happens to you It's leaving no traces. It's like you hear the sound, and it passes through you, and you're one with the sound, and then it's gone. And it's like a pond. Your mind is like a clear pond, and there's no ripples on the pond. And everything has this extraordinary clarity and beauty. And this is really a wonderful state, and if you haven't reached it yet, you will reach it at some point in Sesshin. And you really are an empty-headed fool. To be an empty-headed fool is really a good thing. The ideal in Zen practice is to be able to maintain that state in daily life, in all circumstances. So the ideal is to be able to maintain that unified mind even when we think, right? And even when we're acting in the world, even when we're acting. It's a little bit difficult to do that normally. When we come to Sesshin and we quiet the mind, and the discriminating mind, the discriminating part of the consciousness becomes quiet, then the unconscious mind unifies with the conscious mind. And when this happens, it's that you get this feeling of like deep unity or connectedness. It's like inside and outside have disappeared, and all has become one. This is really heaven, in my opinion. The ideal state would be to be able to maintain this while you're sweeping the floors or washing the dishes or cleaning the bathroom or taking a shower. Now, what usually happens is you get up from the cushion and you go into the bathroom and you start scrubbing your teeth, and ordinarily people are thinking. You know, you're thinking about something at work, or you're thinking about somebody you know. And, you know, you'll notice that you begin to feel worried, fearful, and so on. If we keep quieting the mind, what happens is that, you're going to get up eventually and go into the bathroom to brush your teeth. And all you're going to see is what's in front of you. It's like behind your eyes, nothing is going on. Right? It's like it's just clear back there. And there's no projecting onto the moment. There's no attempt to structure it. It's a kind of choiceless awareness. And when we're in this state, it's almost like a kind of a dream state. You know, it's not a dream state, but we're moving through the moments in a kind of unified way. And everything becomes, it's just unfolding in this beautiful way. I don't know how else to describe it, but when we're aware of something as very real, very intensely real, it has a kind of separation from us, right? Often we're in a kind of dreamy haze, you're walking down the street and you're thinking and you're lost in thoughts, and suddenly you come out and you realize the light is turning red and you have to stop or you get hit by a car. And then you go back and you're thinking, and then you look again and the light has turned green and now you can go, and you walk across the street and you're thinking. And then you get to the other side, and then you realize, oh, I have to stop at such and such, you know. But, that creates a kind of separation between ourselves and the world. It's like we're hardly present in the moment. And another way in which we can be hardly present in the moment is if underneath, if we're not thinking, but if we have, like, powerful emotions or anxieties, you know. So if you're very frightened or you're having a lot of problems with anxiety, it's also hard to pay attention to the moment, because it's like so much karmic activity is going on that the world begins to become very difficult to focus on. And you, in both of these states, we feel very separated from things, you know. When we do zazen, as I say, you know, the thinking part of the mind begins to grow quiet, and we begin to work through some of our karma, you know, and the karma could be powerful emotions, but it could just be a bunch of junk that's floating around in there. But eventually it becomes very clear and clean, we start to feel better. And eventually, you know, it might be day three. You're walking into the bathroom, and you notice that your mind is just blank, and everything around you feels very sort of intimate, or very comforting, and there's a kind of perfection to it all. It's just totally present. And it's very different from, you know, when you're trying to be aware of something, when you're, you know, you're trying to be aware, say, of your car, you know, I'm really try to be mindful of my car, or where, that's a very, or when you're trying to work on math problems, you know, you have to really be focused, right? That's really not this state of mind. This state of mind, I think, is like a, it's like this beautiful, effortless unfolding of events, you know, the effortless unfolding. And it can often feel like these events are coming right out of you, you know, right out of you. And that's quite beautiful. I mean, that state is the that fluid state of a unified mind is really the goal of Zen practice, right? And we get there sometime. Like anything else, it requires practice, right? It requires practice. So you know, it might if you meditate regularly though, and you're working on focusing on the breath, or you're working on your koan, the discriminating mind does begin to grow still, and you begin to work through your karmic obstacles. And eventually, your mind possesses a kind of simplicity. It's just what's happening now is all that's happening, right? And in that state, you feel very unified with things, but they don't have, I think, the character of being quote-unquote real, you know, very hard-edged. They're just unfolding very naturally in a very sort of soft, effortless way. And there is a slightly dreamlike quality to this. In fact, in the literature sometimes it's referred to as, even in the Diamond Sutra, the Buddha says, you know, you should look at this world as a kind of dream that's unfolding, right? And the Buddha means that in this very advanced state of consciousness, there's no longer a self-centered awareness creating thoughts or experience, holding tight to karma. There's just a mind that's fused with the moment. And things pass effortlessly without any obstruction or response on our part. And this is like the highest state. This requires great many years of practice, you know. So you know, in Zen, we say there's two parts of practice. There's the way up the mountain, and this is learning how to make the mind still, the discriminating mind, be quiet, and working through karma. And we have our victories and our failures, right? So sometimes you sit down on the cushion and you have a lot of thoughts. You just can't seem to let them go. And sometimes you don't have a lot of thoughts, but you have a lot of karmic baggage. This is quite common, even among experienced meditators. Eventually what happens, though, is that you still the discriminating mind, and you still the unconscious mind. And and eventually everything becomes very quiet. And at some point people have like a daikensho. This is where the two parts of the mind, you could say, are totally unified, right? And it's like the unconscious mind comes into the conscious mind, and the conscious mind looks at the unconscious mind. After that, you're not done. You still have a lifetime of practice ahead of you. And if you like Zen, that won't be discouraging. But the goal is to completely integrate your life, and that means basically working toward this state where everything is just unfolding effortlessly, with no karmic response on your part. So as an event unfolds, normally we generate all kinds of responses, you know. And those can be fear, attachment, envy, you know. For a person who's done a lot of zazen, sometimes it's possible to move through life with a kind of neutral mind. You know, you're not responding. There's no response. All you're doing is, like a mirror, you're just noting what's happening. You're just noting what's happening. This mirror mind it's like an impartial mind. It's just observing things unfold. The same way you would look at your own hands. You know, this is my true nature. This is what's happening. And there's no response on the unconscious level. And when this happens, you know, everything can be very beautiful, very sweet. And eventually, it's like perfection, right? It's really like unbelievably wonderful. Everything seems sweet, everything seems alive and perfect. Now, you know, it would be nice if if you practice, you'll find that state, I promise. I can remember that happening to me, reaching that state myself long ago, many years ago, here in New Jersey, or in New York, actually. I was at a sesshin with Ado Roshi. And at some point in the sesshin, everything was just so beautiful. It was like heaven. It was really heaven. I left the sesshin and so on. And that's happened to me a number of times, you know, really quite beautiful. I have to say, it doesn't happen to me every day, you know. I too have, you know, my moments where I'm creating karma, you know. And so I have to work on that. I have to try not to create karma. Occasionally, it happens, and it's just extraordinary. The last part of one's life is working through is trying to preserve this unified mind in all circumstances. And it's a challenge because there are things that knock us down. You know, there are things that that catch us by surprise. And, you know, we think we have it all figured out. You know, you think you've got it. And then something happens and it's just like, oh boy. And, you might think, oh my gosh, after all this practice, I'm anxious, you know, or fearful. And then you go, okay, back to the cushion, you know. And you have to do some zazen. And eventually, it might take a little time or it might take a lot of time, you'll get it. You know, you'll work it through. And when you've worked it through, you will stop producing responses, you know. And you'll just have a neutral mind about it. And this process goes on and on. And if you could be in the neutral mind, that mirror-like mind all the time, you wouldn't be afraid anymore at all, and you would be Buddha, a Buddha. Right? So it's very difficult to achieve, in other words. But it does happen, and some people get very, very far down that road. Some people are really quite extraordinary in their achievement of that state. But it's challenging. Yeah? So some people think that Daikensho is like the end of the whole process. You know, it's like, oh, if only I could have Daikensho, all my problems would be over. And Daikensho is like a life-transforming event, that's for sure. But as I say, there's still this work to do. Zen is all about becoming an empty-headed fool. Right? I mean, this is so important. The discriminating mind has to be quiet, and then the unconscious mind, the karma mind, has to become quiet too. And when these things are both quiet, there's like a door that opens up, and there's this tremendous feeling of unity between ourself and everything we experience. And then, we can stay in that for quite a long time on occasion, and it's very beautiful. When it stops, we have to do some more hard work. But it's a beautiful path. It's really quite beautiful because, what we really feel is this tremendous sense of separation from things. That's the cause of our unhappiness, our fear, our envy. And when we can solve that problem, life, you don't have to look anywhere else for heaven. It's right here. We're all, I guess probably everybody here understands this, because you've been practicing. Everybody here's been practicing for a while. But it's just a great pleasure to practice with you. And we can all be empty-headed fools together. Bokushu asked the monk, "Where are you from?" The monk gave a cuts shout. Bokushu said, "This old monk is shouted down by you." The monk shouted again. Bokushu said, "What about the third and fourth shouts?" The monk stayed silent. Bokushu hit the monk and said, "You empty-headed fool." Setcho's verse, three shouts, three shouts. The knowing one knows well. If hell-bent, both are blind. Who is blind? Fetch him, expose him to the world. Well, we kind of have to be blind, right? We have to just be going through the world without... Mr. Sakita has some good notes on this. He says, Zen recognizes five kinds of blindness. The blindness of the general run of ignorant people. That is the blindness of people who are so distracted they can't see things. There's the evil blindness of the heretic. I'm going to skip that one. There's the true blindness of the enlightened student. The person has seen the source. There's the blindness of those who stick to their realization and make much of being enlightened. And then there's the transcendent or genuine blindness that is the condition of the Buddhas. This appears when we have basically harmonized our two minds and the world, and we're just everything is unfolding as though in a dream, just through this natural unfolding. And then we're not registering any karma anymore. Yeah? So, beautiful path. Today, everything is helping us wake up. It's really wonderful. So, let's 5 days will be like this. So please enjoy your beautiful path, your beautiful Zen practice.